This is Heather Johnson, and you're listening to the Ayurveda Life School Podcast, episode number 108, Type 2 Diabetes and Ayurveda with Dr. Jackie Christensen. This podcast is for people who want to take their health physically, emotionally, and spiritually to a whole new level using Ayurvedic medicine, the ancient healing tradition from India. This is the Ayurveda Life School Podcast, and I'm your host, Heather Johnson. Hello, my friends. Welcome to the show today. We are so pleased to have a special guest with us today, and I will introduce her to you in just a moment. Before we get into that, I just wanted to let you know that we have information about the Ayurveda Cooking Intensive that is available now on the website. So you can learn more about that at ayurvedalifeschool.com/cookingintensive. I'm so excited about this. I have been curating the very best Ayurvedic recipes and looking at how we can make it more accessible, how it can become simplified, ways that you can understand why you're doing what you're doing, how to adjust for your doshas, for a family. So it's going to be a really fun, very educational course. And what's great is we get to do it together. It's an online course, so you can do it from anywhere in the world, but we will actually be cooking these foods together. We'll have educational lessons as well as hands-on experience. We'll have cameras on so we can see what we're doing. You can get feedback if you're having any struggles, and we can really prepare food together as though we were in the same kitchen, which I think will be fabulous. So you can learn more about that, again, at ayurvedalifeschool.com/cookingintensive. And now here's today's show. Welcome to the podcast today. We are so excited because we get a special guest, and it's going to be my privilege to get to know her well, along with the rest of you as listeners. But today we've got on the show with us Dr. Jackie Christensen. She is a beautiful practitioner of many types of holistic arts, and I just feel privileged to get to be with her. Dr. Jackie is a naturopath. She is an Ayurvedic practitioner, and she's also an instructor and educator. She teaches at the Mount Madonna Institute of Ayurveda. She has a practice in Santa Cruz, California. And the most exciting thing, I think, is what we're going to talk about today is her background with type 2 diabetes. So she is a specialist in this area and has recently published a book that can teach us more. And the name is beautiful. It explains it all. The Ayurveda Solution for Type 2 Diabetes, a clinically proven program to balance blood sugars in 12 weeks. That's a pretty big, why you would need to get that book. But Dr. Jackie, we're so glad to have you here today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Heather. I'm very excited to be here and meet with you and have this conversation about such an important topic today. And Ayurveda really has so much to offer for people suffering from type 2 diabetes, because Ayurveda, as we know, it's a life science, and it's really wonderful at addressing, you know, diet and lifestyle type issues with people. And when we look at type 2 diabetes, that's really a lot of the root causes come from diet and lifestyle. So Ayurveda can be really woven in there beautifully to help people adjust and find balance within their true nature.
I definitely agree with that. I was actually, before we talked today, I looked up some stats because I'm a numbers girl. I like to kind of know where we're at. And the numbers are astonishing as far as diagnosed type 2 diabetes. And it's very underdiagnosed as well. So the numbers are going to be even bigger. But we're looking at 34 million Americans with diabetes, and 90 to 95% are type 2, which is incredible, right? And even worldwide, 400 million. And those numbers are just rising.
Exactly. And it's not just all adults too. Child onset diabetes is a big problem. Especially here, I live in Watsonville, California, and we have a very high rate of childhood diabetes. And that's something that's, it's not natural for children to suffer from type 2 diabetes. So it's really something that we have to, you know, address with a whole family approach and help people learn how to engage in more physical activity and change their diet and the way they eat, and address, you know, Agni issues as well and Ama, because it all plays a role. It's the whole lifestyle, the whole stress-induced diabetes. Children are under a lot of stress these days. So that's a contributing factor as well. A lot of the screens, we're in the age of the screenagers, or the children these days, because they're just on the screen so often. So, you know, anything that we can do to really get more movement with kids is going to be beneficial.
What I think is challenging, so I've got four children, and so I watch how from my 19-year-old down to my eight, how that is evolved as far as the activities they choose to spend time in. Totally different when my oldest was a young child versus my current young child. And I think that can be really challenging for families. Do you see generationally that when children are having these diagnoses of type 2 diabetes, it's a familial thing because it is so lifestyle oriented?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So there's, you know, definitely genetics and hereditary play a big part in it too, because these are the foods that we learn to eat when we grow up. And then those are the foods that we know how to cook as adults. So, you know, it's what we're fed as children is what we end up, you know, cooking for ourselves as adults. And it's the same way with family activities and family lifestyle. So if a lot of the activities are sedentary, you know, those are the things that children are going to do in their daily life as adults as well. So families who are more active, families who go to the farmer's market together and get vegetables and go to the beach and run around and hike, you know, they're going to have less incidence of type 2 diabetes.
It's kind of a challenging thing from an Ayurvedic perspective because we view it a little differently than maybe from Western medicine. But it's a beautiful thing, right? Because from everything I understand, and what's interesting, my father has type 2 diabetes and was diagnosed when I was in high school. So he's been dealing with this and managing it for 20 plus years. Yeah. And we didn't know that he had type 2 diabetes until he started having really frequent urination. Mm-hmm. He was thirsty all the time. And mm-hmm. he was just eating and never satisfied. And so that trifecta is, you know, from a Western point of view, oh, now you have diabetes. But can you kind of walk us through from an Ayurvedic standpoint? There's a lot more signs. There's a lot more happening before we actually see that outward manifestation.
Exactly. So in Ayurveda, you know, frequent urination, thirst, those are really like the last stages of the disease process. So Ayurveda is preventative in the fact that it really recognizes the initial stages in the disease onset. So, the disease process in Ayurveda, it really starts with oversaturation. And what oversaturation means is just like too much of a not so good thing. So the tissues of our body have a certain amount of moisture that they need to have integrity in there. And our digestive system also needs a certain amount. And, you know, too much is not good and too little is also not good as well. So we just want to have like the perfect amount of moisture in our tissues and, you know, within our digestive system. And when that moisture level starts to get excessive, it starts to get a little damp in there. And then our Agni gets off. So our Agni is our digestive fire. It's the strength of digestion that helps us metabolize and break down food. Mm-hmm. So when somebody overeats or eats the wrong foods for their constitution, you know, eats too many of the kind of classic dietary causes, and Ayurveda and Western, they both agree it's a lot of the kind of the simple carbs and sugars. Ayurveda goes a little further to say even like oily, heavy, kind of greasy foods, you know, they're all root causes. Cold foods, emotional eating is also a cause. So not just what you eat, but how you eat as well. Mm-hmm. You know, so knowing the difference between a mental urge and a physical urge when you're hungry is a big thing. A lot of times people just have a mental urge and they want to eat. So that's more of like a craving, but a physical urge is actually like feeling like hunger pains and, you know, just knowing that you need to eat something and that you'll eat anything. You're just starving. So that's when you know, like, I'm actually physically hungry. When you have like one very specific food that you're craving, you know, that's more of a mental urge. So it's in Ayurveda, it's the mental urges that we're supposed to resist and not the physical urges. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so the emotional eating, overeating, eating when you're not hungry, eating when the food or the meal that you had before is previously has not been digested, all of those things can upset your Agni or your digestive fire. So that's the start of the imbalance of the disease process, is the Agni is diminished. And it's usually because of that dampness increases. So the dampness in the body increases, you know, the digestive fire starts to diminish, and then people are going to experience, you know, just kind of minor digestive disturbances. So it can be just kind of stagnation, slow, heavy digestion. So feeling like you have a rock in your stomach after you eat, or just feeling heavy and lethargic. And so what's happening is that your digestive fire is diminished, so it's not metabolizing food properly. And then so we build up this waste. It's called ama. So it's like a undigested food particles. They're kind of still in your stomach. They're not really digesting properly. And they can, there's only so much room in your stomach for ama. So then it starts to overflow outside of the stomach and still like in the digestive system. So then it starts to impede on liver functioning and the pancreas. And so it's starting to affect organs that produce insulin and store glucose for our body. So in this case, the ama is really, it's blood glucose. So it's the sugar. It's all the sugar. So it's a waste product, but because our body isn't properly breaking it down and metabolizing it and utilizing it. So it ends up circulating throughout the body because now the liver and the pancreas are damaged. So glucose uptake doesn't happen. And then it circulates throughout the body, causing damage to other tissues. And that's when you'll start to see frequent urination because it's the kidneys are working really hard to remove that blood glucose. So it's so there's excess urine and frequent urination. And then you start to see more kind of systemic neurological type issues, the thirst too. It's from your body's like getting rid of all the excess fluid. So it's actually, it's drying the body out as well because it's overcompensating. So you have frequent urination, you know, and just a dry mouth. And those are classic Ayurvedic signs, but more so in the late stages of the imbalance or disease. And, you know, Western medicine categorizes those as, you know, some of the first signs and symptoms that you would see. But in Ayurveda, it really, it starts with Agni and a buildup of ama. And then it's that ama that spreads. And in this incidence, when we're talking about type 2 diabetes, the ama is the blood glucose that's not being utilized by the body, and it causes damage, you know, to the pancreas and to the liver. And so then glucose uptake doesn't happen efficiently and then circulates throughout the body.
I love that explanation because we can see the why. And I feel like in many cases, people are surprised when they're diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, or they think, well, it's because my dad had it, so of course I'm going to end up with it, or I'm just predisposed. There was nothing I could have done differently. And I think that's a really disempowering place to be at.
Exactly. It is very, very disempowering, and it kind of takes on the victim role. And really, you know, Ayurveda is preventative and it takes work. And so that's why it's, I mean, it is a lovely, beautiful medicine, but it's really like it's, we have to do the work. And sometimes these changes aren't easy, especially when it comes to type 2 diabetes and diet and lifestyle. I think these are some of the hardest changes that people have to make because they get so used to things. They're in their routine. And let's face it, habits are hard to break. It's hard to break old habits and, you know, switch our diet to from things that we've been eating our whole life to trying, you know, bitter greens. Like bitter is just not a taste that most people are attracted to. But for type 2 diabetes, bitter is great.
Well, and I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about someone's in the early stages. And so the diet and lifestyle is where we're focusing. If someone's already been diagnosed, or they've been diagnosed as, you know, pre-diabetic syndrome, and they're getting close, they're on the edge. Are there things that would they still start at that same route? I mean, are they going to do it differently as far as treatment if they're already at that advanced stage than necessarily someone who, you know, oh, I'm just having sluggish digestion. And most people don't even pay attention to that. They really don't even notice it unless you really help them to see that's a problem. But would we treat those two ends of the spectrum differently, or would we go at them the same way?
Well, it always, it depends on the person. So there's no exact like one way to approach Ayurveda when you're applying it, to different people. But usually diet, Agni is going to be an issue. So digestion, there's, that tends to be how you reverse the disease process. So you want to optimize digestion because then we're going to enhance metabolism. Yeah. So it is a metabolic disorder. And so we really need to address metabolism with clients, and with someone who is, suffering from type 2 diabetes. So, there's a lot of ways that you can address Agni issues. And so each person is going to have their own root cause for the imbalance. For somebody, it might be emotional eating. So really like, honing in on that and, having somebody really determine what the difference is between a craving and a physical urge. It could also be if somebody's eating ice cream at night, ice cream is cold, damp. It really is one of the most like best examples of a kapha type food, because it's cold, sweet, heavy, slow, sticky, like all those kapha qualities. So if people are eating more of these heavy, cold foods, excess salty and sweet are also contributors. Foods that are high in dairy or dairy products, milk, yogurt too. A lot of times people think yogurt is a health food. Mm-hmm. In Ayurveda, it's really, it's something that we use as a condiment more so than eating a big bowl of yogurt. And, it's heavy to digest. And a lot of times there's a lot of sugar in yogurts too. So really being careful there. Of course, foods with simple sugars, so cookies, flour, white flour is also a big one to avoid, and white rice. They all break down pretty easily. They're sweet. Cow and pig are also kind of heavy and oily. So those are hard to digest as well. Wine is another one too, that Ayurveda sees, and beer. So, if it's somebody who, is a regular drinker, those would be a couple things to address as well. But it's really looking at everybody's, you'd look at somebody's diet and see if there's any clues there or anything that they could avoid. Lifestyle is another thing that we need to look at too. So Ayurveda specifically says sitting on cushions for long periods of time.
Well, and that's what everyone does right now, especially in areas where we're still kind of homebound. There's a lot of sitting on cushions or chairs, as it were.
Exactly. All the mini cushions that we sit on throughout the day, like we're always sitting on a cushion, right? Whether it's a couch or a chair or our patio set, like we're always on a cushion. Even our bicycle seats are like soft and cushy. So,
oh, that's so funny. You're right. So does that mean we just sit on hard chairs and we're good? I think it's the sedentary that's the problem, right?
Yeah. So it's the sitting, and there's, so sitting for long periods of time. So like trying to break up that sedentary behavior and getting more activity and more movement. And that's really like research has shown that sedentary factors are independent of exercise. So even if a person does regularly exercise, if they're just doing their, 30 minutes or 45 minutes, three times per week, but they still have, sedentary lifestyle, they're working, they're sitting all day, they're not really moving around, they can still develop type 2 diabetes. So we really do want to get, more movement. And that is difficult with a lot of desk jobs, but standing desks can be an option. Breaking up, work routine throughout the day. So getting up, kind of moving around, can all be good. I think, and exercise, that's another good one. So, Ayurveda recommends, in the text, there are these really, not really applicable for our day and age, so something like dig a well, or there's like walk for 100 miles and live like a sage. So those are things that's like, okay, that's great, but I can't necessarily do that. But what we can take away from that is, you know, resistance training. So, you know, there's a lot we can do. So what they need is to build more muscle. And so muscle helps with glucose uptake. So if we can get people to build a little more muscle, that's going to help, you know, reduce blood sugar levels. So a gym, you know, a gym could be a good option. Resistance bands are great activities. And there's a lot of, you know, videos on YouTube that, you know, you could watch to just do like some resistant band activities. One of the other things that Ayurveda recommends to increase activity is for a walk after meals.
I love that because I think that is so easy to implement for people and it makes a huge difference. When I was in college, I lived in the dorms and we had access to too much food because it was cafeteria style eating. And I remember my girlfriend and I, they had a little ice cream bar there. And I mean, I was not living Ayurvedically at 18 years old. I was putting all the toppings on my ice cream bar every night, but she lived about a mile from where she was in a different dormitory. And so we'd have to walk and we'd always walk the other one back. And I felt like that made such a difference in how I felt because every time we would eat, we would walk for a good half an hour afterwards and we weren't race walking. We weren't sweating, but we were kind of helping digestion to start and that food to start to process. And I think it just makes you feel good. It kind of ends that meal time so that, especially if you've had trouble with eating excessively or excessive snacking, which can be a problem with, you know, this lifestyle, it helps to let your body know you're done. Like I'm complete with this meal and now I can move on. So I love that piece of advice. I think if people just started all doing that, we'd all just feel and be so much healthier.
Yeah. And you know, I feel like there's so many things that you can do, but really like if you just do a few, you know, you don't have to do it all, but just start with a few, start with small changes in your diet and in your lifestyle and in your daily routine. It can really be helpful. So especially walking after, you know, your biggest meal of the day can, or when you're like, I just had a big bowl of pasta, you know, then just like really go for a walk after that meal. And that's another thing is like making your lunch your biggest meal of the day too. So that's when our digestive fire is the strongest. That's when we can really, you know, digest these like heavier to digest meals or bigger meals. In our culture, we tend to have dinner as, you know, our biggest meal of the day. And that's really not in alignment with Ayurvedic principles because as the sun goes down, so does our digestive fire. You know, so when the sun is high in the sky, that's when our digestive fire is the strongest. So that's when we want our lunch to be our biggest meal. And then, you know, make sure to get dinner in before it's dark, not eating too late at, you know, 9 o'clock at night, or right before we go to bed. So you have optimal time to digest and then go to sleep, which brings me to another cause of type 2 diabetes is sleep habits. So it can be sleeping too little, sleeping too late, napping during the day are all causes. And all of these have been researched by Western science and proven as well. So it's interesting to see how Ayurvedic concepts, you know, which originated thousands of years ago, with Western medicine is starting to see these like, oh, what about this? Do we see this like connection here, these factors, and how do they contribute to blood sugar imbalances? But research has been done with napping and how that is a cause of type 2 diabetes and how even cultures who do nap as part of, you know, their culture and they take an afternoon siesta or, you know, an afternoon nap, even those people had higher blood glucose levels after they woke from a nap.
Wow. Well, a lot of times it's after they ate lunch. So they'd have their meal and then when they should be going and walking for their best benefit, they're then taking a nap. That's kind of tricky. And it's hard, I think, to break some of those habits. I mean, as a child, you put down for naps all the time. And
I know. Especially and as you're like used to it and you're like, oh, I get so sleepy after lunch. And I just want to take a 10-minute nap. But the studies have shown that the longer the duration of the nap, you know, the worse the consequences are. You know, so a half hour nap is going to be worse than a 10-minute nap.
Yeah.
But really, yeah, trying to break that habit can be a good thing.
And that's hard. Sleep habits can be tricky, but it is doable. I mean, I've seen good changes, especially within my spouse, as we've converted him to being an early riser and an early to bed. And it's taken, you know, decades of marriage to get him there, but he is there. So good. And it took a puppy along the way. I had to get a puppy that he had to get up in the morning.
Cute.
So if in doubt, by a dog. Yeah. So when we're talking, all of these symptoms seem predominantly, I mean, these are all kapha type disorders, but there can be an interplay with vata and pitta in there too. So
absolutely.
How do those kind of factor in?
So it's all the doshas. Usually the kind of, you know, when it kicks off the disease process, it starts as a kapha imbalance. So Ayurveda really sees, you know, there's 20 different types of diabetes.
A little different than Western, right? We're like type one, type two, gestational, done.
And yeah. So 20 different types, 10 types of kapha, 6 types of pitta, 4 types of vata. So there is still, you know, debate as to whether these different types are stages of disease. Because a lot of it looks like these are all different kinds of stages, you know, which we see and would just identify as like, okay, this is all type two, but it can be all different stages. Mm-hmm. And ancient rishis used urine to diagnose type 2 diabetes and high blood glucose. So what they would do is just get a urine sample from a client and then pour it out by a tree. And if the ants started to gather and drink the urine, they knew that there was a high blood or high glucose in the urine. And so that's, you know, the kidneys filtering out all that glucose from the blood into the urine to expel from the body.
That's an interesting practice. I highly doubt that you or I would do that with clients, but it is a very effective way.
And they were to nature and their surroundings. I mean, that had to take, you know, years and years of observation to mm-hmm. connect those dots.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're definitely very in tune to the doshas and dosha cycles, but it does, vata, pitta, and kapha are all involved, especially when there's, you know, inflammation related to type 2 diabetes. That's mm-hmm. that's more of like a pitta type imbalance. So inflammation and type 2 diabetes is a pretty hot topic in Western circles. And so we do hear a lot about that. And that's, you know, the blood glucose, it's inflammatory to the body. So that's just another reaction that is happening when blood glucose levels are high.
And bringing in those bitters that you mentioned can really help with some of that inflammation, because it does deal more with pitta. I mean, it helps the blood and cleansing the
exactly.
blood, right?
It's cooling, all those things. And then if we think about frequent urination, you know, that's a pranavayu type action going on as well. Mm-hmm. So vata does play a role, and vata also plays a role with the emotional eating type of component and sometimes overeating. Like a lot of times we just associate it with kapha, but there's a lot of vata involved with overeating as well, because vata people tend to feel more ungrounded, you know, and so they kind of like can eat and overeat just to help them feel settled down a little bit.
When the emotional side of that, there's a lot of sensitivity with vata as well. I mean, I think we can see that in different doshas, but that's a characteristic with vata. And I know, watching different clients that I've worked with, and even going through eating issues myself in my youth, that numbs when you overeat, it numbs some of that sensitivity to emotion.
Yeah.
It kind of prevents the emotional vibrations to travel through the body. And so you're grounded, and now you're not feeling all those emotions that were causing distress or pain for you. So and I don't think people think of that. They tend to think, especially if somebody's overeating and it's creating heaviness in the body, that it's always kapha. But for them to see it could be vata, maybe you got to calm that down. How do you manage that then? Because if you've got this vata issue with ungroundedness, but we've got excess kapha and they're combining to create this beautiful mix of diabetes, which, you know, I say that sarcastically, but it does make it a complicated mixture. Do you still treat the kapha aspects more, or how would you implement the vata side of it?
It's complicated, and it depends on the person's constitution, you know, because if a person's vata and we give them, and they have a kind of more of a kapha type imbalance, we don't want to do all like kapha pacifying, because a lot of those things are going to aggravate their vata. Yeah. But one thing that does pacify both vata and kapha is warm. Mm-hmm. You know, because vata and kapha are both cold. So yeah. As long as we can bring like warm things in and kind of more soupier things, like khichdi is a great example, you know, of a food that we can bring in to help balance vata and kapha. Herbs, you know, culinary herbs are going to be really good. So ginger is another really great herb for vata and for kapha. It's also great for balancing blood sugar. Cinnamon is another great herb. Fenugreek is a good one as well. So really just kind of making sure, you know, there's not a lot of cold salads. And, you know, greens are really good for diabetes, but making sure they're cooked good, and they have some herbs on it. So culinary herbs are great because they can really transform foods that could be too light, you know, or too difficult to digest into something that's really nourishing and satiating and the body can metabolize. Turmeric's another great herb.
And that hits the inflammation as well, which is great because you're getting kind of all the angles with the turmeric, with all the doshas. When I think it goes back to the Agni, right? Because when you're adding in all of these herbs, not only is it pacifying the dosha, they're working on Agni. I mean, cinnamon, ginger, really good for digestion and getting that digestive fire moving. It made me think of detoxifying. Because I know doing a Panchakarma, which is more of a traditional Ayurvedic cleanse, but even just doing a, you know, gentle seasonal cleanse or a specific to diabetic cleanse, is that something that you work with your clients on when they're, you know, working through diabetes?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's in the book as well. So the book has a 12-week program.
Oh, yes. I'm glad you're going to talk about this because I just thought people love it when they're like, this is what you will do. We want instruction. We want to be guided. So yes, tell us more about that. I did want to talk about that.
Definitely. So the book is kind of broken up into two parts. So the first part is, you know, educational, talking about introduction to diabetes, root causes, you know, what you want to introduce, how you want to reduce, and, you know, other things to do to avoid. And then the second part is the 12-week program. So it starts out with a constitution quiz. A lot of people have taken a constitution quiz before, but this one is actually just, you know, specifically for type 2 diabetes and the type 2 diabetes that you may be suffering from. You know, so like we said, there's kapha type, there's pitta type, and there's vata type. So there's questions on your constitution and then also questions that are based on your current state. So depending on where you end up there in the constitution and current state quiz, that will determine, you know, the program that you follow.
Oh, I love that. So they can totally customize what they need. It's not just a, you know, one size fits all. They can actually tweak it.
Exactly. Exactly. So then the programs are similar in the sense that there's three parts to the program, the 12-week program. The first 8 weeks is an elimination diet. So at this point, herbs are introduced, culinary herbs. There's a tea to drink, and it's an elimination diet. So you're eating more balancing foods for type 2 diabetes and for your constitution as well. Because of what we know, like our unique constitution is very important in Ayurveda. Yeah. So one man's medicine, you know, can be another man's poison. So we really want to, you know, make sure that everybody is getting the right foods for their constitution. And it includes, you know, an exercise program for your constitution. It also includes stress reduction, you know, so something to kind of unwind at the end of the night, and also sleep habits are addressed. So all of these things, because Vata, Pitta, and Kapha, they all vary a little bit, you know. So Vata people need a little more sleep than somebody who is Kapha constitution, you know. So that's going to be a factor, you know. And even the breath work and the yoga type practice is going to vary depending on if you're trying to balance Vata, Pitta, or Kapha. Mm-hmm. So so the program is a little different there for each one. And then so that's 8 weeks. That's the first 8 weeks. And then there's a 1 week kind of home panchakarma. So this is where, you know, people are doing more of a mono diet with Khichdi.
Love it. Yeah. If they don't love it at the beginning, they will by the end. It's such a beautiful restoration to the digestion. It feels so good.
Yeah. It is so good. And there's options too. So there's, you know, a variety of grains that you can add to it as well, and vegetables. You know, so you can play around with the Khichdi, but you want to try to do as much as you can a Khichdi type mono diet. Mm-hmm. And then there is a Virechana, which is a purgative. So there's, you know, you've got to oil the body up before you can remove toxins from the tissues. So there's just like drinking small amounts of oil, anywhere from, you know, a teaspoon to 3 teaspoons for a few days. And so what that does is that goes in to the digestive tissues, and it helps kind of soften the bond between your body's tissues and the toxins that are lodged in there. Mm-hmm. And so it helps soften that bond. So when you do the Virechana, which is the purgative, those toxins can be pulled out without actually harming the tissues of the body.
Yeah.
So then we have a Virechana, and then there's a 3 week reintroduction of foods. So this is when people are really, they're taking their blood glucose, you know, daily, and with their having their meals, when they reintroduce a food, they're testing their blood glucose levels a couple hours after their meal to see how well they're digesting. And, you know, if they're over 100, then it's maybe this isn't a food that they want to include because it's starting to affect their blood glucose. Yeah. Throughout the program, we do have people like weekly assessing their biomatrix. So, you know, they're checking their BMI, they're checking their weight, they're checking their blood glucose levels, because we don't want somebody to, you know, lose too much weight or have their blood glucose levels go down too fast. You know, so it's definitely something to monitor there as they go through the program, because they're going to experience results pretty quickly. If people even follow, you know, 50% of the program, they're going to see some great results, and they generally happen pretty quick.
Well, the body is beautiful at healing. Do you find that if someone's using insulin, typically that's not something that we see as much with type 2, but over time, if the cells in the pancreas are damaged, they may have been originally diagnosed type 2, but now they actually have no function of the cells producing the insulin. And so they've really converted into a type 1. Right. Would this be a program that would probably not be good for them, or would it still help them? If they're using insulin,
it definitely help them, but you know, because a lot of the herbs can help regenerate the pancreas that they'll be taking. But it's recommended for them to work very closely with their doctor.
Okay, good. I just like to cover the all of the angles with.
Yeah, because there's, you know, they may have to have their insulin reduced, their insulin levels reduced that they're using, and that's something that they'd have to work with their doctor. You know, as their body is regenerating and healing, and they just don't need the insulin as much anymore. But yeah, it is recommended in there that people work very closely with their doctors, with their program, you know, and they're monitoring their blood glucose levels daily so that they're fully aware of the changes that they're going through. And that's very encouraging when somebody starts, you know, with a blood glucose levels of like 160, and then they start like slowly working down. And
that's a beautiful thing to see that as well. I think it's wonderful to see transformation. And this is a really, I love how your program's laid out, because it's not harsh. It sounds very gentle and doable, where you're not having to change everything all at once. You're slowly taking out. And I really liked when you talked about the reintroduction and seeing what the food does to you, because typically we're so unaware. Exactly. And we eat this rice, or we eat this chicken, or we eat whatever, you know, we put the cookie in our mouth and we don't see what is that actually doing inside my body. So exactly. I think that's helpful.
It's really conscious eating. So you're fully aware of the effects that food is having on your body when you're constantly testing like that. And so that's why reintroductions of food are really important, even with clients who do not have type 2 diabetes, but it works really well with a lot of kind of insidious digestive sensitivities and hidden allergies, mm-hmm. is for people just to keep a journal of their diet and, you know, what they're eating when they start reintroducing foods, because people are more sensitive and in tune with their body after they do a detox. So they really notice those foods and how it's affecting them. You slowly reintroduce one by one, because usually we're just eating things and we're not thinking too much about it. I'm just grab a little here, have a snack. You know, somebody gives you something at work and you eat it. And then the next thing you know, your rash is breaking out. You know, you're tired all the time. You're constipated and you're not sure where it came from because all these random things are going in all the time.
Well, and that is that whole take a bite here, take a bite there. Is this a program that would be suitable any time of year? Would they need to do it seasonally or could they just start when they find it?
Yeah, people can start whenever they're ready.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, definitely appropriate for a year round. So.
And I did wonder, I'm sure there are people who would want to be guided as far as have a little more interaction. Do you Absolutely. Work with clients through this where they could meet with you throughout the 12 weeks to kind of
Yeah. So I have a group program that's kind of ongoing that people could join with me.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Where can they find out more about that?
So that's on my website.
Okay.
And that's practiceayurveda.com.
Oh, I love that. Okay. That's easy to remember, everyone. Practiceayurveda.com. This is the place you go. If someone is just maybe feeling like they're pre-diabetic or they've been told, their doctors told them, this would be good for them, right?
Exactly. The whole program would be great. Because a lot of times when people are pre-diabetic, you know, doctors don't really have a lot of advice, you know, and maybe just they're like, okay, exercise more and stop eating sugar. But there's really like so many other things that can be done. And, you know, exercising and sugar are two very important pieces. But as we know, like Agni is a big issue. Stress-induced diabetes is also huge. So if somebody has, you know, cortisol and adrenaline in their bloodstream all the time, you know, those are the hormones that tell blood glucose to be released from the liver and into our arms and limbs so we can run or fight or, you know, do that thing that we have to do to save ourselves. But today, mm-hmm. you know, most of these threats are all mental. They're not a physical threat. We're mentally stressed, not, you know, a physical threat causing stress. So, you know, stress reduction is another big one. So if somebody has a stressful job or a stressful, you know, life, they could still look relatively healthy. You know, they could be fit, they could not be overweight, they could have a healthy weight, but still be, you know, pre-diabetic because mm-hmm. of the stress levels. So, you know, really working on stress reduction, pranayama is one of the best things we can do to really just like calm the heart rate, calm the mind down, you know, and that brings blood pressure down and helps control those cortisol and adrenaline releases.
Well, and it's simple practice that you can do anywhere. So pranayama, if that's not a word that's familiar to listeners, it's breath practice.
Breath work, yeah.
You can have a stress moment in the middle of the grocery store and you can take your pranayama. I had a client that would do alternate nostril breathing a lot during a really anxious period of time. And she would tell me I would be in the store and I would just stop. And I would literally just be, I'd have my hand up there and I'm doing my alternate nostril and it would calm me down. So I like that it's practical like that. So as we wrap up, I wanted people to just, anything else that you want to share about the book, where can they find this beautiful book so that they're able to?
Yeah, you can find online, you can find it Amazon, you can find it at Barnes and Nobles. Most large book companies will have it and distributors. But yeah, you can get it online at Amazon and Barnes and Nobles. And awesome. I'm really excited about it. It's really tangible, applicable information for people. You know, it's really, it's a very easily approachable book. Mm-hmm. So there's not a lot of complicated Sanskrit or Ayurvedic jargon. It's really written for the layperson.
And I, having read much of the book, I will agree with you that it was very accessible. And I think there was enough of the background in there that you'll really learn a lot, even if you know quite a bit about Ayurveda, there's still good education that you find in there. So,
and there's some really good recipes as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we have a ton of great recipes. There's there's over 70 recipes in there. So, 25 for the Vata diet, 25 for the Pitta diet, and 25 for the Kapha diet too. So there's really a lot of variety. If you're not sure, there's food lists in there as well. So you can see, and then you're like, oh, I don't know how to use this, this herb or this vegetable or mung beans, there's some recipes there to get you started.
Good. We all need a little guidance sometimes. So I'm going to give you guys the name of the book one more time. The Ayurveda Solution for Type 2 Diabetes, a clinically proven program to balance blood sugars in 12 weeks by Dr. Jackie Christensen. And your website is practiceayurveda.com. So if you want to work with her in a group program to help you support yourself as you move through this, I think that would be wonderful. And we all just need to lift one another as this becomes the next pandemic, really, this type 2 diabetes. So let's nip it in the bud and take care of it. Exactly. Thank you so much for being on with us today.
Thank you so much, Heather. It was a delight to be here and so great to chat with you today.
Same. Have a beautiful day.
Thank you. You too.
Before you go, was this episode helpful for you? Well, the most helpful thing you can do in return is to leave a review in iTunes. The reviews are what keep the podcast going. And be sure to subscribe and share this episode if you loved it. You can connect with me online at AyurvedaLifeSchool.com, on Instagram, and on Facebook at Ayurveda Life School. Have a beautiful day. Namaste.